The Angry Chicken is a production of amove.tv. Check out Amove TV for more podcasts covering Blizzard games. And for more of Jocelyn's gaming podcasts, visit jossplays.com. The Angry Chicken is brought to you by our legendary patrons over at patreon.com/TAC.
Time's up. Let's do this.
You smell like a leper gnome!
I knew it!
So hot!
A podcast about Hearthstone and Battlegrounds. This is The Angry Chicken!
Greetings and welcome back, everyone, to the first episode of The Angry Chicken after a new standard year and a new expansion. And you can't really say new core set because it's the first time we've ever had a core set and the arrival of a core set. It's a big, big week for Hearthstone. We're here to talk about it. I'm Garrett Weinzierl here with Ridiculous Hat. Jocelyn is still out on medical leave. She's doing well. Tweet a unicorn to @JossPlays. Let her know we're thinking about her. How you
well,
doing, dude?
She's doing well, mostly, except for her pre-order golden legendary. She might not be doing well after that. So my understanding is that it was green and not the kind of green that she was hoping for.
Oh, well, you know what? I don't really care because Joss got like a golden legendary in one of her golden pre-order packs. So, yeah. Yeah. How was your pack opening, Hat? How did you? It's a bit of a tradition here on the Angry Chicken. I don't know if you listen to the show outside of being on it, but Joss and I usually when it's a post expansion launch episode, we come on here and I go, "All right, Joss, how many more damn legendaries did you get than me?" And she'll say some insane number, and I'll yell at her, and then I'll say the sad number of legendaries I pulled. So how'd you
well,
do?
So I'm looking at the show notes here. It's going to be a little different. Garrett, you're outing me. I am an ultra whale. Every expansion, I get the Tavern Pass and both pre-orders. And then I also had 135 packs from gold. So I opened 281 packs.
Well, I mean, are you really a whale if like half of that is from in-game currency that you just accrued over time?
I think it's the other half that qualifies me as some kind of marine life.
So you opened 281 packs. How many of that was purchased with real money?
146, I guess. 5 goldens. That can't be right.
Oh, okay.
Now.
Yeah. No, I got both pre-orders as well. I mean, it's that's how you do. That's why I opened.
So did you not buy packs with gold?
I tend to wait to kind of just see how the meta shakes out and see if I need to fill in gaps.
I see. You're patient.
But hold on. Because of the new rewards track, I'm actually like sitting on more dust and whatnot than usual. So don't go throwing the patient brand at me just yet, because I think I crafted like 3 or 4 legendaries yesterday because I just couldn't wait to play certain things. Murloc Shaman being one of them. So needed to make that Flurgle, which I did not crack because the universe didn't want me doing Murlocs. I'm also like was weirdly excited about the priest legendary starts with an X. What the hell is
Zyrella?
I was really excited
There's
about
nothing
that.
Weird about being excited about that.
The thing that's weird is that even though I did in the 11th hour, I came around on Rez Priest, and that's all I really have been grinding out quests with for like the last 3 months. So just kind of. Was like, if you can't beat them, join them. And it was just matching up so well with what I was running into for months on end. I still think it was premature of me to craft that legendary, because who the hell knows? Priest changed so much yesterday that who the hell knows? Like, yeah, that legendary in a vacuum, I think that card's just flat out good. It's just a good card. But is it going to be a good deck? Is it going to be a good archetype? Who knows? I don't care. I was impatient. I threw dust at it and I just shut up and take my crafting reagent. That's what I yelled at my monitor as I crafted that priest card.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty safe craft as long as Renew is in standard. Like, you, just those two cards together is enough. And also Apotheosis. Like, it's Priest and Healing and also kill their stuff but not mine. It's I think you did fine. I also crafted that card.
Yeah.
But
I think what else I made. It was that. Yeah. It was it was Flurgle, right? I know it's a different name, but
Flurgle. Firemancer Flurgle. You can also call him Murloc Ultras.
There you go. Yeah. Made that card as well. And I crafted a thing, another thing or two. Anyway, how many so you opened 21 packs. How many legendaries did you get?
So in those 281 packs, I got 16 legendaries. Now, I did a high roll two goldens, one of which was out of the golden, the five golden packs that we got. I got a Tavish there, and I got a golden Mordrish out of my regular packs, because there's no pity timer on the golden packs. So that's just fortune. That's just luck. But I have the entire set. I crafted the last two cards I needed, which was Zyrella, and there was one other card. I forget which one. Oh, Guff. I had to craft Zyrella and Guff, but I have everything, so I got my Diamond Brucon. Also, I keep track. The Jade and Pizza card backs were the luckiest. Pie was the worst. And yes, I do. So if I go 20 packs without opening a card, I change the card back, and I keep track of which card backs are the best. So Jade and Pizza both got four legendaries each.
I was like, what do you mean Jade and Pizza? Okay, there you go. So the very first ever Hollow's End card back with like the purple stained glass and the pumpkin is my all-time favorite Hearthstone card back. And it just
great card back.
It just lives as my favorite card back. That's it. You and Joss would get along well. Joss's spirit is alive and well today because she does the same superstitious what I would call nonsense, to each
and I should clarify, this doesn't change the contents of the packs. I do it because it's fun, but also I do keep track. And also some card backs are better than others. So I'm not saying it's changing the contents of the pack. I'm saying I have evidence of which card backs are better. The reader can draw their own
conclusion. It doesn't do anything, but I have evidence that it does things.
Not that it does things, that there was a correlation. And I'm not saying that's why it happened, but I'm
evidence
saying
evidence by definition. Okay. All right. Yeah. To each their superstitious own. So I'm assuming you're not counting your pre-order legendaries in your pre-order total or your legendary total.
No. Okay, no. Cool. Or I'm not counting the Diamond Samuro, and I'm not counting the Mancrick. But yeah, and I also at the start of the. I got my weekly quest on Monday. I did not play Monday, so I saved all of my quests on the new reward track for Tuesday. I hit level 26 on the first day just by clearing those quests, which includes a legendary at level 20. So I have everything. I have the entire set already, and I have all of the core set in golden, and it just feels like I can kind of just do anything for the rest of the set, and it's pretty rad.
Yeah,
pretty rad.
I too saved up my quests, but one of my quests is for Battlegrounds, and I left it because I know eventually I'll play some Battlegrounds. So I did. I cleared out everything except for the Battlegrounds weekly, and I did one more quest this morning, and I'm at level 28 now, I believe.
Like, yeah,
it's bonkers.
They split the quests in half, split the levels in half, so you move twice as fast. Like that would be the old level 14, but the feeling is so much better than it was last time, and it was pretty good last expansion, unless you opened Reddit or Twitter. And now, like the in-client vibe.
Yeah, I like it. It feels a lot better, as I would assumed, right? Because they basically. You're going to reach new levels twice as fast because there's twice as many levels and they just split the XP between it, but they also split the rewards between it. So you're getting smaller amounts of gold, but you're getting those amounts more frequently, which one of the biggest complaints about the old system that I really agreed with, there were clearly bigger complaints, but one of the biggest complaints that I agreed with about the system as it launched was like, if you're the type of player that wants to go play Arena and you just need a little bit more gold, the time it takes between one level of the past to the next and having that much gold kind of locked behind each level, it was just prohibitive. Whereas before you could just get a couple wins and get that like 10 more gold you needed to go do an arena run. That was where it was really, you know, rubbing people the wrong way. And I really felt for that. Like, I don't play arena, but I totally understand that being something that would really, really grind gears if that's how you play Hearthstone. I'd love to hear from some arena players if you're feeling better about smaller amounts of gold, but getting it more frequently. Or also if you're paying gold into your duels runs, anything that you save up gold for, if getting it smaller amounts, but more frequently has helped, hurt, or you didn't even notice. I want to know about it. Right. Yes.
Has been good, bad, or the same. Yeah. Send us an email for any reason. Just talk to us.
Also send me an email. If you went, what? That was the thing. TACpodcast@gmail.com. Send an email going, what? Question mark.
Yes. Huh? Yep. Send us an email for your favorite cocktail recipe.
Oh, yeah. Please do.
Definitely do that.
But if you send me a recipe for an old fashioned and involves mashing fruit up at the bottom, expect a very angry reply from me.
Yes. Also, send Garrett an email to let him know that he forgot to make a show going live tweet.
I didn't forget it. I just forgot to hit send. There it is. It's out.
All right. Don't send Garrett an email. He did it. It's fine.
It was sitting there in the hopper, and I forgot to hit send because you were like, I got a crate from the Barons. Let's open it up in the pre-show. And I got distracted by your unbridled joy opening up Hearthstone swag.
That is good excuse. Good redirection. I approve. Damn well
right.
Done.
All right. So you got 16 legendaries out of 281 packs. Jocelyn wrote me and informed me that she opened 12 legendaries in 188 packs.
And which is better because it's my number minus 100 packs. I guess it's about like, that's what, 4 legendaries and 25 packs? I don't know. I guess that's a reasonable ratio, but 12 out of 188 seems insane.
It's above average. Seems really good. Sure. Yeah. It's way above average. I only opened 140 packs. I opened what I pre-ordered. And I think I forgot the gold here. So I guess 145 because we got 5 golden packs. Yeah.
Your ratio is the best of all three of us.
It is. Yeah. I opened up 140 packs. I got 11 legendaries, and one of those legendaries, and it wasn't from the golden pack. It was just in a regular pack, was golden.
So, what was it?
I forget because I didn't write down the name. It was Apothecary Hellbrim because I remember opening it and going, Hat would be very angry right now.
Why would I be angry?
Well, because it's a rogue legendary and you're like, when I think rogue, I think you.
But why would I get angry that you have a rogue card? Then you're going to play rogue and then I'll have a friend. No.
Okay.
No. Now the world of rogue is open to you now. You'll feel compelled to play it and then we can talk about it.
I believe I've actually I would have had it naturally cracked. I've never crafted a golden legendary. I've cracked more golden rogue legendaries, I think, than any other class period over my history of playing Hearthstone. Oh, damn. Jocelyn in the chat. Hi, Jocelyn.
There's a unicorn. Hello, Joss. You said you've never crafted a golden legendary?
That's correct.
I have crafted 2.
What were they and why?
Leroy and Edwin, and I don't think I need to answer the why part.
Oh, okay. All right. If we're counting things that we were reimbursed on, yeah, I crafted Golden Rag, Golden Sylvanas, Golden
Leroy. I didn't craft those when they were Hall of Famed. I crafted those to play with them.
Oh.
I was expecting that those would be reimbursements at some point. They were long-term rentals because they're Leroy and Edwin, but I crafted them because they're Leroy and Edwin, and I wanted to play Golden Leroy and Edwin in my decks.
So you just kept the Blockbuster video and just banked on them going under.
I guess you could say it that way. Also, in this metaphor, it's a movie that I really liked watching, and I wanted to show everybody else how much I liked watching it. It's a labored analogy.
I mean, you could put a projector on your front lawn and make your neighbors watch the 60s version of Godzilla versus King Kong.
I would do that if I had a front lawn.
if I wanted
to talk to my neighbors.
Side of your building. There you go.
Yes, could do that. Projection wouldn't be very good. Now we're getting in territory of my draft. Let's get away from this.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. So anyway, you got 16 out of 281. Joss got 12 out of 188. I got 11 out of 140. I just opened pre-order packs, and we'll see. We'll see how much gold I sink into it. I've got a lot of gold. The most gold I think I've ever had in the history of Hearthstone as a result of the previous rewards track. So I could get a lot more packs. But I'm kind of just seeing how things shake out after burning quite a bit of dust yesterday, crafting some legendaries. I was just too excited to play with.
Yeah. So. Did you get the Tavern Pass last time or this time?
I got the Tavern Pass last time. I got the Tavern Pass this time because honestly, I ended the first round of it, really enjoying it. And I really enjoyed the cosmetics. I probably should have checked this time around before I bought it. I don't love the cosmetics, and I definitely bought it just because I was like, oh, I had a good time with the rewards track last time. I want to reward it by purchasing it. And then I went and looked at it, and I'm like, I don't actually really want most of this.
Did you play with Diamond Samura, though?
I have not actually put Samura in a deck yet.
He's so cool. And the Diamond cards, I was not sold on the Diamond cards when I first saw them, especially when they were still images. And even in the gameplay videos, in client, I just can't stop staring at them. They're rad.
No,
they're
that's super good. Rad that's in client.
The Samura animation, too, he darkens the screen and he says some totally like badass stuff. And then he's just like, and then they die.
Yeah. Yeah. Chat room saying in their opinion, well, some people are saying in the chat room, they're in their opinion, the XP bonus is worth it. And Joss is agreeing with it. And Joss is a member of the show. So that's the opinion we go with. And I don't disagree with that. The speed at which you kind of level through is, well, it's good. And this is where I always want to remind folks like, hey, I do make money from talking about this game. And so this is a part of my business. And so buying packs is a business expense. So I wouldn't just keep all of that in the back of your mind when I'm sitting here talking about how much damn Hearthstone stuff I buy. So, yeah.
And the Tavern Pass, there is math for it. If on the last system, you either hit level 155 without buying the pass or level 195 with buying the pass, you made a profit. You got back. That's assuming that a pack is 100 gold. The 20 US dollars accounted for more than 2,000 extra gold if you hit 155 without the Tavern Pass or 195 with it. So that's roughly in this new system, you just had 50, both those numbers, 205 or 245. If you're going to hit those numbers, it is technically a profit to buy the Tavern Pass, but it's profit that you use for the next expansion. My general rule has been, if you like the shinies, buy the Tavern Pass, and if you don't, then don't, because buying it for small incremental profit for a future set is really unsatisfying. But if you play a lot and you hit those numbers, then it is reasonable to buy it for a strict profit value. I bought it because I like the shinies. I like the shinies.
Yeah, I did too. I bought it because this is a hobby of mine that I really enjoy. So there you go. My other hobbies involve cars and cocktails, and they are way more expensive than Hearthstone. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's perspective is a thing. But yeah. Yes, Garrett, I'll agree. I too enjoy Hearthstone.
I wish I could get my favorite bourbon game for $20. That'd be wonderful.
Have I asked you what your favorite bourbon is? Have you told me? You probably
Buffalo Trace. I really like Buffalo Trace, which used to be $30 for a big bottle, which is great, but you can't find it anymore. And if you can, they're upcharging now.
A lot of Buffalo Trace's other labels are fantastic. They make Booker's, right?
I believe so.
It's delicious.
I am uninterested because Buffalo Trace makes the best old fashioned on God's green earth. So I don't really care what else they make. But
that's true.
Alas, here we find ourselves. Anyways, we should thank some folks. Speaking of how we spend our money, we should thank the folks that are supporting us over at patreon.com/TAC. If you like what we're doing here at the Angry Chicken, if you like our independent coverage of this this digital card game, it's up and coming. I think it has some legs. It's called Hearthstone. You can head on over to patreon.com/TAC and support us. So, yeah, we really, really appreciate it. Fun fact, we always have a bit of a mini exodus. Like at the standard rollover, it seems that that's the point when people are like, I'm this is it. I'm getting out. I'm done. And that's fine. That makes all the sense in the world. So we usually have like a little mini exodus of patrons. So if you're sitting here right now being like, damn, I love this show. I get so excited when it hits our feed. Check it out. Patreon.com/TAC. We really appreciate all the support that we get there. And if you can't support us, that's okay too. We understand. Don't worry. We're going to keep making sure this show ends up in your RSS feed, in your podcatcher of choice every week. So go check out the Patreon, get access to our Discord, get an ad-free version of the show, among some other perks. And to our most recent patron, Clay Walden. Thank you, Clay. We really appreciate it. And also congrats, Clay, on being the patron we thanked during the biggest upheaval in the history of Hearthstone.
I think that's true. I'm not sure. It's either this or the Battlegrounds launch, I think. But to be in that company is pretty great.
I think that's the biggest upheaval in like the version of Hearthstone that has existed the longest.
Yes. It's yeah. Yeah. It is Hearthstone Constructed 2.0.
The last time I kind of felt this discombobulated around Hearthstone, it had nothing to do with the game itself and everything to do with the fact that all of the devs that I knew the names of were leaving the team. That was the last time I kind of felt this, like, things will never be the same again. And that's how I feel right now, but it's because of the game itself.
Yes. And instead of things leaving and it's we're worried, it's things leaving and we're like, phew, that's great. And just the feel of the game, it is definitely from one day to the next. I cannot remember a bigger shift in the feeling of playing Constructed Hearthstone.
I agree. I like your thought about things leaving and that feels good, with the one exception of Penflinger. Go to hell, dude. I never want to hear you again, but I'm going to have to hear you for at least another year. So
with that, you're going to have to hear that until at least another balance patch. I'm not going to say for sure.
Are you calling a shot? Are you Babe Ruthing a future nerf hat? Is that what you're?
I think the play pattern of Penflinger has a limited novelty factor that has worn off. And Skolomance neutral one drops are pretty good cards. So Penflinger and Broom. Well, OK, here's the real harbinger. Kibler said they should nerf Broom and Flinger. Kibler smart. Things he says come true.
What? So, OK, hold up, though, because Kibler also said they should murder the classic basic set. 5 years ago. So things Kibler says come true, but not always in a timely fashion.
Team moves faster now. I imagine that. I hope Penflinger's not in standard for 5 more years. Something will have gone horribly wrong.
That's fair. Really, I think it just boils down to what Shiro wants. Because, you know, Shiro is the keeper of the Kibler.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all that matters. All right, that's going to wrap it up for our pre-show. Let's get in and talk about just what the hell is going on in Hearthstone.
Good news, everyone.
Which means we get to talk about launch bugs, which talking about bugs and the tone in my voice seems a little like mismatched. It's because most of the major bugs have already been fixed. And so how do you feel about bugs in general, Hat? Are you the type of person that goes to Reddit and immediately just wants to set the world on fire with how it's completely unacceptable and how dare a video game studio ever make a mistake? Or are you like me in that you kind of enjoy them as long as they don't outstay their welcome, because it's a fun story to remember about being there on day one of something new coming out?
I'm assuming this is a rhetorical question, but the second one, obviously. But it's so, like, I have a lot of compassion for the devs. I think that some bugs are really funny. I love the current shaman bug where you can still summon the Wrath of Air totem if you're not Thrall, but Thrall summons the new strength totem. It's based on your hero portrait. So if you want to get spell damage in while you can, switch to Morgul or Rosticon. But if you want strength totem, you switch to a Thrall. I think that's hilarious. I think that's a funny bug.
I knew about this. Forgot about it, and while playing my Murloc shaman last night, was like, why the hell did I get a spell down? Oh, right. I was just sitting there. I wasn't streaming or anything. I was just playing on the couch, hanging out with Katie. I just felt dumb alone. So now I feel dumb with an audience. I hope everyone enjoyed that.
I think that you being dumb for an audience is part of the brand of the show, so thank you for the vulnerability.
Ouch.
Thank you for that. I'm not going to say that you're a dumb person. I'm going to say that the moments of realization that Garrett just figured out, oh, I'm dumb, that's just content. That's just hashtag content. That's what that is.
I'm pretty sure you just said, hey, loser. That's what you just said.
Hey, it wasn't me. Yeah, be mad. So some bugs are good, like funny, they're content, and they're not majorly gameplay breaking. It is got to be disappointing for the team and for players. A lot of people just couldn't play the game yesterday for 8 hours. After launch of a really highly anticipated expansion. I'm not the sort of person to say, oh, they should have tested this more. I'm sure they tested a ton. They made the biggest infrastructure change to Hearthstone since they added Battlegrounds, and even then to Constructed. Constructed was not ever programmed to be played without Classic and Basic. But people not being able to play for 8 hours, unless you have a very specific workaround posted for social media, it was probably really negatively impactful for Blizzard and for those players. Especially when the marketing push to get people back into the game this expansion was so well done with Classic and with the quality of life of this patch in general, it was a miss. And I'm sure that they're relieved they got it fixed that quickly, but also disappointed that it happened that that way. And it's, if anyone was frustrated that it was hard to get a game when they were excited and everyone was talking about the expansion yesterday, I would not blame them for being frustrated. I think that'd be reasonable.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree, too. I always feel for folks, especially if you take time off, which I don't hear about nearly as much in Hearthstone as I do, you know, covering World of Warcraft. But people still do it for any damn game, really. You hear about it for any game. But at the same time, as someone who's, like, done a lot of day one launches, I just kind of expect it.
Like, yeah. Well, the play is you don't take off the day of launch. You take off the day after. So I worked until 7 o'clock yesterday. And that's a normal shift, by the way. I work 11 to 7. That's not like, you know, it's not like I work for 12 hours, whatever. And I planned my stream for 10 p.m. Eastern and then took today off because I always like to leave time for the servers to settle and for some deck list to populate for me to copy. And then the next day, I like to stay up super late and play. And the next day, I like to sleep in and then jam some more games or like do a podcast like right now. So they hot fixed the patch, they hot fixed the gold issue. It kept people from queuing at 9:30 and I started my stream at 10. It was perfect. It lined up. But if someone was excited to be like, I want to be the first one in line, imagine you go to Disney for the opening day of whatever, of a Star Wars Land or whatever. And then the first one in line is like, oh, the roller coaster's broken. You have to wait here. Like that would, I would not blame anyone for being upset with that experience.
That's a good way to put it. And I have been in that experience and I was disappointed.
I'm guessing that you were mad.
I was mad?
Were you then?
Well, here's the thing about theme parks. There's another ride you can go get on.
Yeah, and in Hearthstone, we call that Arena or Classic Ladder because both of those did work. But you didn't want to go on that ride because you didn't want to play Arena. Sorry, Arena players. We love you. But it's everyone wanted to do the new thing, and you couldn't do the new thing for a while. But they fixed it, and they found a workaround, and they were trumpeting it from the rooftops, and people were able to get in a few hours in by taking out the golden core set cards from their deck, which was a very strange place for things to be bugged.
Extremely strange, yeah. And it could also fail if your opponent had gold cards, so you only had so much control over trying to get into a game. Do you think it had? I'm sure I'm so wrong here, but you know where my brain just went? It's Nozdormu's fault. Nozdormu, because it checks both players to see if they both have it. And it's probably some line of code that has to do with that check or that handshake, and it just blew it up. I'm sure I'm 100% wrong and had nothing to do with it, but that's exactly where my brain went.
I wish you were right, but no one was playing Nozdormu yesterday, unfortunately.
No, I'm just saying, like, tweeted about it. Whatever they had to add code wise.
But it wouldn't change for golden versus regular, would it?
Maybe it would. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I know as much as
I would be surprised if that was it, but I've been surprised before. I have no idea. Sure, it was Nozdormu.
Again, I'm used to like other Blizzard games, again, like WoW, where it's like, oh, we added a new dungeon, and now like trees are floating in a Burning Crusade zone for some reason. Well, are they connected? No, but something we changed somewhere made this change happen. Yeah.
Well, and there were some weird bugs, like Grave Rune is bugged right now. It summons for the player that casts Grave Rune as opposed to the player that owns the minion. And they didn't change the card Grave Rune because it just rotated out yesterday. So why would they change it the Thursday before it rotates out without telling anyone? They clearly didn't intend it, but it clearly changed. So like, yeah, there's an abstraction. The designers work in scripting on top of the code the engineers make. And so when the engineers change something about how the code works, but the script stays the same, then sometimes weird things happen.
Yeah. Then there was the bug where the 16 cards added to the old classic set later in Hearthstone's history are still dropping from classic packs, or were still dropping from classic packs. And this caused them to disable the purchase of classic packs for a bit, but they are now...
Not just the purchase, you couldn't even open them. You tried to drag it and it wouldn't go.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, I mean, Oh, no, that's untrue. I still have 4 golden classic packs because I like having them there.
Yeah. But you didn't try and open them. If you did try, they would have gotten halfway to the middle of the circle and then just stopped. And then you let go of the mouse and just goes back. It's a very strange animation. Someone recorded it. And I saw it like you drag it halfway across and then it just boop. And you can't drag it further and it just floats there. And then you let go of the mouse and it pauses for a second. And it goes back to the pile.
Well, because it was an emergency turn off, right? And they're not going to sit there and be like, let's get the animation team in here and make this beautiful and snappy. And I believe the word that Ben Brode used was crispy.
Yes.
Is how they like their animation.
This was ladders broken, so let's fix that. But also we have an economic impacting issue. So real quick, let's just turn those off. And so they turned classic packs back on because they fixed the issue as well as the golden corset issue. They fixed that too. And they issued dust compensation as of today. The way the packs changed, they were supposed to lose on this Tuesday. They're supposed to lose all of the new replacement cards, like your Natalie Selene's and your Call of the Void and whatever, and go back to having Azure Drake and Ragnaros and Sylvanas and packs. And that didn't happen on time on Tuesday. So people opened the classic packs expecting to hit Leroy's. And they were unable to, but they were able to open Natalie Selene's. So if you opened a card that you weren't supposed to be able to, they let you keep the card, but gave you the full dust value of the card in addition. So if you opened a legendary, you got 1600 dust for that card that you weren't supposed to be able to open. So if you logged in today and you got a giant pile of dust and you're like, I don't know what happened, you opened classic packs and got cards that you were not supposed to. And that's why they compensated you.
There it is. We have someone in chat going right now that's going, oh, is that why? So
yes.
Ugh. Revan, you opened some cool stuff apparently, but anyway, classic packs are now re-enabled. That compensation is now out if you were one of these people that opened a classic pack and got something you weren't supposed to. And then there was also, on the kind of somewhat smaller side of things, there was a bug where Ring Toss and Renling's Rifle were only offering secrets that were not from the core set. That hotfix has also been deployed now. This, about an hour ago, is when I went and checked this thread. So as of an hour ago, there are some unresolved bugs that are part of the known bugs thread on the official forums right now. And there is, to the best of my knowledge, still a bug where Ysera Dream cards are not working as intended in classic mode.
Yes, they are. They're supposed to be the old versions and they're the new versions.
Right. And then there's also a bug where players can be locked out from creating or deleting decks when they previously were not. And apparently there's a workaround for this one where if you find yourself experiencing this issue, Blizzard is recommending that you unlock creating and deleting decks. Oh, sorry. The way you unlock creating and deleting decks is to win one game against Demon Hunter in practice mode. Don't know why this is linked, but it's been shown to work for most players experiencing this issue. So go to Solo Adventures, go to Practice, and make sure you win against the Demon Hunter. Apparently this also works if you win a game against Demon Hunter in Arena, Tavern Brawl, Standard, Wild, Classic, or Casual. So
you have to make sure that Illidan knows that his year is over and that you want to play with the new stuff. You got to be like, Illidan, I'm going to beat you. Go away.
yeah. So murder Demon Hunters, Jocelyn. I'm telling you right now, go do it.
She's way ahead of you.
So and apparently according to the chat room, Tavern Brawl is currently bugged.
Yes. The eggs don't work. Also, apparently they didn't work last year. So I guess it's the same issue. This was, I think, the first brawl after Jomeg left. And I don't know if it ever got fixed, but the eggs just don't function. So both players just have 1/3s just hanging around in the board. But you should still do the Tavern Brawl anyways, because it rewards a year of the Phoenix pack instead of a classic pack. And that's relevant.
You should also follow Joe Mag on Twitter, even though he doesn't work on Hearthstone anymore. He's just an entertaining dude.
Yes, 100%. And in addition to all these bugs, there are still a bunch of weirdo gameplay bugs. We talked about the Shaman Spell Power bug, Grave Runes, if you're playing that in Wild, summons minions to the wrong player, Sparkjoy Cheat, if you have a Bamboozle and another secret in hand, it will put both into play, Vectus only summons one Whelp, Watch Posts are not supposed to increase the cost of cards drawn off Secret Passage, but they currently do, Mancrick's Wife, if you Secret Passage into Olgra, it has no mana cost, but it's green, you can play it, if you do, nothing will happen, just don't touch it. Bugs are going to happen when they make patches this big. I am really confident they will fix a lot of the stuff in the very near future, but it was a big patch, and you know, I think a rocky opening day along with a few vestiges, they're still hanging out. The game is still totally playable, and it's, you know, there's just some rough edges.
Yeah. No, I agree. I was really happy with how fast everything, well, the larger issues were addressed. And yeah. It's a so far, because I also waited just till the evening to start playing. I had a very smooth experience with Fortune the Barons. So
yes,
we'll keep you up to date on if more bugs rear their ugly heads and if any more bugs get fixed. So talk about that next week if there's anything to talk about. Now let's thank this week's sponsor.
I got the best deals anywhere.
Which is our other podcast. You have one ridiculous ad. Actually, you have quite a few. But where can people listen to you if, you know, they're not catching you on the Angry Chicken?
I have one, and then I have more. The best place for my audio content hub is to go to my text content hub, which is twitter.com/ridiculous hat. But then Coin Concede, we make the competitive format, the competitive side of the game more accessible to you over at coinconcede.com. If you're already in the competitive world and you like stats, viciousyndicate.com, you know them for their data reapers, but we're back in podcast form. So definitely check us out. And then also you should head over to amove.tv for a wide variety of podcast content.
My dude, are you pimping my pimpage for me?
I'm just saying that if I wanted to hear about this game, other games, and Star Wars, I would go to amove.tv. That's what I would do if I were looking for that kind of content.
Gotcha. And if I were looking to support Jocelyn and her endeavors outside of the Angry Chicken, I would be excited to know that she has a World of Warcraft podcast called For Azeroth and a general gaming podcast called The Gamer's Inn. Now, she is also absent from those shows at the moment, but her co-hosts on those programs are also holding down the fort, much like we are here, and some phenomenal coverage over on those programs.
Yeah, and you can definitely check out For Azeroth over at Warcraft Radio, which is, you know, a great platform for listening to all kinds of Blizzard-based content. And For Azeroth is a flagship show over there. You go, Jocelyn.
You do it. Yeah. So go check it out. All of the things we just talked about. And now let's talk about the decks we actually played in this brave new Fort the Barons world that we find ourselves in. I don't like even know where to start.
I know where to start.
We have this issue at least 3 times a year, but now we also have mini sets. So we're going to probably have this issue at least 6 times a year where there's so much upheaval. It's kind of, you know, who knows where to start, but where do you want to start?
I want to start by asking you, how do you start? What is your approach?
What is my approach to a new Hearthstone expansion? Well, we did talk. It starts with kind of my approach to pack openings, which we already talked about, which is I tend to get both bundles and I usually just open that and I sit and wait. And typically I broke this rule this time. Typically I don't make any legendaries. I work with what I've got. Whatever I open for the first few days, that's what I play with. I did break that rule this time because there were multiple legendaries I was very, 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 very excited about. But yeah, typically I open 140 packs, get what I get. And then I go and if it's day one, I go and pull up any kind of a roundup of theorycraft deck lists, and I look for theorycrafters who I trust or just players that I tend to like the decks that they come up with. This time around, I'm a big Dexter fan, so I was playing some of his lists. I actually went and I pulled up a spreadsheet that you made alongside Steve. I always forget what Steve's handle is.
Wicked Good, and then also we're getting some help curating with Pasca, who is big in the tournament scene. So the three of us are putting lists together because we realized a couple of years back that we both do the same thing, that our approach is much more like decks first and then craft to make them work if we want to. So we decided, hey, why don't we collaborate on this and put all the deck lists together? And it's like, hey, why don't we publish this? Because 15 minutes after opening packs, you go into any stream. What's the best deck? You got a deck list? Got a deck list? Got some coats? Y'all got any more coats? And so putting that together for the social audience that wants to know what to play, well, if you want a class you want to try out, you head over to this sheet. We've got them all listed by class, by date, by archetype, by whatever you want.
Yeah, there's an absurd number of deck lists on this spreadsheet now. And I basically did what I always do with that spreadsheet last night, which was anything that just kind of sounded vaguely interesting. I did a copy of the deck code, went in the Hearthstone, and then just watched the deck populate and saw how many cards I was missing. And if I wasn't missing any cards, that deck got saved, and I moved on to the next thing that looked interesting. So I found out last night I'm missing a ton of Warrior Legendaries that are not from this expansion. It goes to show how many Warrior decks I play. But
yeah, I don't think you were playing much of that at all last year.
I think Warrior is my least played class just in general. It's like woefully tiny win numbers. Just not a class that's ever really spoken to me. But
Joss is really good at Warrior. You should.
I know. Learn from Joss. I know, man.
Even though Bomb Warrior is gone, which, yeah, I'm so sad it's gone.
Oh, no. Please wait.
I threw a party.
No, ugh. Don't.
Ugh. Yeah. And it's weird. Like, I keep playing around cards that definitely aren't in standard. I think every time that a mage has a secret up, I play around Flame Ward. There's no more Flame Ward. It's not, you can attack mage with your minions. You can hit them.
Yes. Yes, you can. So that's basically what I do. I just kind of wait. And then usually today, now that there's enough stats, I'll go perusing stats websites. I'll go look at HS Replay and see if you're lucky, you can find classes you're interested in with 1,000 games played on the same deck list. So you can at least get somewhat trustworthy with a big old fat quotations statistics. I see you raise an eyebrow, but I'm sorry, Hat. Do you have a deck that has 1,000 game play that you can share statistics with me for?
In the grand scheme of things, 1,000 games is not that many. I like HS Replay for the initial guidance because when you're a day into the expansion, what everyone wants to know is like, what should I be doing? And HS Replay is great for that guidance. The win rate numbers and the game counts, be a little careful of those. Just because what HS Replay is doing, it's day one, they see a bunch of deck lists with a bunch of similar cards and say, okay, which cards matter in this list and how do we categorize it? And which cards matter in a deck list will change over time. Like, I expect Secret Paladin will probably not be running Cannon Master Smith in the near future. My experience with that card was not all that positive. But if they're looking for that card as an identifier and then it stops being run in list, does that deck still get called Secret Paladin or get called Other Paladin or Librem or whatever? But having some kind of guidance is great, and the fact that HS Replay has some information this early is really, really helpful, especially to look at, like, mulligans, to get an idea of what we're mulliganing for and which cards really stand out.
Yeah, I don't really...
By the way, in Secret Paladin, mulligan for sword. Sword is good.
Yes, yes it is. I was going to say, I don't really care all that much what they call it. I'm just interested in what deck is just slamming the most games. Like, how many people are, like... by just sheer numbers, what are the common decks being played out there? And
yeah, and you get an idea, but it's not the name of the deck. It's that if there's a one card difference and the deck is categorized differently by the algorithm, then you might get the wrong numbers on how popular a thing really is. There might be a deck that's getting played more, but people are trying with a specific card choice that matters a lot to the system. And so it might call one deck Secret Paladin, one deck Secret Librem, and they should be smushed together. For example.
I mean, that's fair. Yeah, what I do is I just ignore the meta page for, like, the first few weeks. I just go to the deck page, and I just look for games played, because that means it's games played with that one deck list and that one deck list only. I don't... whatever is on the meta... It's cool. Like, I'm looking at it right now. Secret Paladin's at the top. I think that's trustworthy. Secret Paladin is working.
Paladin's very good right now. And I will also say, HS Replay... in particular, Andrew Brown did a great job with the archetype naming this time around, because there's a mage deck that has the watch post in it.
Oh,
did you see what the name for this deck is?
If you look in the show notes, Ridiculous Hat, I capitalized one of the words in that deck name because I thought it was so clever. I wanted to die.
Yes. So Andrew did this. He's in our chat right now. It's based around the hero power augmentation, but it plays the watch post. Hero Tower Mage.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Hero Tower.
I'm trying to find it right now so I can get a visual for the video
there
audience.
It is.
Yep. Oh, Hero Tower Mage. Yeah. Well damn done. Well damn
so
done.
Good. So
I love
good.
It. I love it. Now, Andrew is in our chat room right now saying it may have been a 5-head moment.
Yeah. And this will all, the numbers will stabilize over the course of a week or two. Right now, you can get general idea of trends. Just don't take any of the win rates or mulligan percentages or whatever as gospel. It will shift over time because we're seeing really unrefined stuff in the most volatile standard it's ever been. But it's a great starting point and more than we've had for most expansions.
Yes. Yeah, I agree entirely. I always take everything with a grain of salt. But as soon as I start seeing any one list with over 1,000 game play, that's when I start paying attention to the deck listing on HS Replay to give me some just any direction at all. Like you said, you know, I sort it by mulligan. I don't take it too seriously, but I get a vague idea of what's going on. Just because I want to. My time is limited. I want to try as many different things as quickly as I can and feel like I have at least some semblance of an idea of what I'm doing. And so this is one of the best, in my opinion, one of the best tools out there to do that. That's what I do. What do you do, Hat? What do you do? A brand new expansion is out. Let's ignore for the fact right now that this is like just the single biggest, like, complete upheaval. The table has been turned over in a really awesome and fun way. What is your general habit on a launch day of Hearthstone? And how do you get started playing?
I have an extremely refined routine. So you know what you said about you like to try a bunch of different things and feel like you know what you're doing? I get rid of that second part. I don't even know what I'm doing. I have no need for that. So what I do, I have a very regimented plan every expansion. First, it's usually a Tuesday. I usually work a lot on Tuesdays because Tuesdays, for those of you that didn't know, very busy day at the movie theater because we write all of the schedules for the weekend, the employee schedule and the show schedule, which are deeply connected. We write all those all day on Tuesday. So it's a big administrative day. So I work Tuesdays. I take Wednesday off. I usually plan a stream to open packs and then play a bunch of decks that night. And then all day, from launch until I start, I hoard deck lists like a gremlin. I just get as many deck codes as I possibly can. Now we have the spreadsheet to optimize this entire thing. Because in addition to like the Vicious Syndicate theory crafting article, disclosure, I work for Vicious Syndicate or work with them, you know, content, whatever. But they also make good decks. Zach makes good decks. So I you know, get a couple codes from there, and then I see who's streaming, and I go over to donkey.top, D0NKEY.TOP, a whole bunch of great deck lists on the front of that page. And then I just go on Twitter, and as I am known to do, and hoard deck lists and enter them in. When I get ready to sit down and play, before I open a single pack, I fill all 27 deck slots. Then I open my packs. And then I go play maximum of 2 games per deck. Last night on my stream, I opened packs for a while. And then I played games from 11:20 to 1:40 a.m. In that 2 hours and 20 minutes, I played 9 decks. And I already have another like 12 or 13 that I want to play different decks. So I'm just going to keep cranking them out just to get as wide of an experience as possible. This is not optimal for win rate, by the way, or gaining experience, or really anything other than it's kind of like if Hearthstone's a restaurant, this is the tapas menu of just a bunch of small plates, just to try as many flavors as I can.
That makes sense. Yeah, I jumped around a bit last night, but I didn't play as many decks as you did. But the first thing I did was, I believe, Secret Paladin, because I had everything I needed for it, and it's Paladin. So.
Wait, Garrett? Well, your first deck was Secret Paladin?
It's because
I'm shocked! I can't believe it! This is so out of character!
It just so happened I had all the cards for it.
Garrett, you own Paladin cards?
No, I didn't. This is not one I blew dust on. This is not one that I had to craft a damn thing for. I just happened to open everything I needed for basically every secret list I was looking at. And so I was just like, I'm just going to go with Dexter's and see how this goes. And I'm happy to report that I like that. I like that archetype quite a bit.
Well, I guess there's a first time for everything.
You know, I'm getting a little tired of your sass here, Hat.
But you keep inviting me back, so you know, fool you once, shame on me. But you know how that goes.
Has nothing to do with Arthas, chat room. I still don't have the Arthas portrait. I have no interest in it. It's not good Arthas. It's stupid Paladin Arthas.
Yeah. Also, that grind to get that portrait was, I did not enjoy that at the time.
I have.
It's probably easier now.
tried it. I think I gave it like a 2 hour like honest try one weekend back when that was current content. And I was like, I hate this.
Yeah.
And it's not even Lich King Arthas. I don't why am I doing this? I moved on. Never went back. Still don't have it. Don't plan to get it. Anyways, let's just bounce around. I've got if you've got a link in here, Hat, I can pull up any of these deck lists for the video audience. If you want to bring up anything off the cuff, just drop a link in and let me know. While we're talking Secret Paladin, I think for the video audience, I'll go ahead and hit the wrong thing and show our Angry Chicken logo. Here we go. Here's the secret Paladin list. But I like this archetype a good amount. My first reaction, though, was that it can be very, very awkward curve wise, especially if you if you draw your secrets. It's kind of weird. And I wasn't sure how I felt about the Sword of the Fallen. This is the new 2-mana 1/3 that casts secrets after your hero attacks. But I understand how important it is to find this card, but damn, it feels bad when you get two of them and you draw any of your secrets.
It's so, as of right now, that card is a fairly major win rate outlier, but this is not an expansion launch like Day 1 Demon Hunter or Day 1 Galakrond Shaman, where there's one deck that's far and away broken. There are cards that are quite good, and this card is quite good on turn two, but it's kind of self-balancing. It's a bad top deck. It's bad if you draw it in multiples. It's bad if you draw your secrets. And the deck overall is good. It's rapidly dropping in win rate, which was very inflated yesterday, but still a strong deck that is worth playing. But the deck has built-in fail states. And also, there's not a lot of card draw outside of Sword of the Fallen here and then and Northwatch Commando, which is the 3-mana 3/4 if you control a secret, draw a minion when you play it.
It also has Hand of a Doll.
Oh, yeah, and Hand of a Doll is cycle.
Yeah. But it is neat. And I had another one of those like realizations, and I even like tweeted about it too, because like my very first game, I was sitting there with just this board full of 1/1s because the version I was running I don't think the list I have up has this. What's the spell that on corrupt summons 5 freaking?
Oh, Day at the Fair
tokens. Yeah, Day at the Fair. That I believe is out of the Dexter list. And I was just sitting there with just turn after turn. I just had a board full of 1/1s and I got the late game and I was sitting there just like, I mean, this is cool, but like, how do I actually kill my opponent? And then I drew Kazakus and I was like, oh, that's right. I can build a golem that gives my board +4/+4.
Yeah. Kazukus is good.
Kazukus. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It feels pretty different from the previous iteration. For those that played back in the day of Mean Streets, that it's very much not a defensive card. It's very proactive, but the options on the golems are pretty powerful, especially the fives. The one is definitely disincentivized from the past because old Kazakus, you would take the 1-mana option a lot of the time, especially like on turn 5, you would play it. But now the body matters, but the 5-drop option, there are so many good choices. They're like Lifesteal and Battlecry deal 3 to 2 minions. That's a 6-point swing and kills 2 minions. The most powerful one that I think I've seen consistently taken is summon a copy of this minion. That's really, really good. Really, really, really good.
Oh, yeah, because that's you can combine that with what's the second choice? Oh, yeah, yeah. It's
just Divine Shield or poison. Rush or Stealth, yeah. Or Taunt or Lifesteal, any of the body modifiers, the static abilities.
Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense that would be getting some mileage and doing some work. So, and that doesn't go up in power. That's the same regardless of which size golem you go with, right?
They change based on the size of the golem. So,
specifically,
summon a copy of this minion. It is summon a copy of this minion.
Like, yeah, that's just Grom's blood does, which is the summon the copy. That is what it is, regardless of the size of your golem. It does not move up in power.
Yeah, I think most of them scale, but that one is just straight up what it does.
Yeah, yeah. The new Kazakus does feel quite good, good example of taking numbers with a grain of salt, because I saw that the most popular Murloc Shaman was not running Kazakus. But there was one that was barely registering. I think the last time I checked it, like 400 games played that was running Kazakus. It had a lot less games played. Take all of this with a grain of salt, but I had a much higher win rate. Because to me, I look at Murloc Shaman, I'm like, how do you win if you can't buff your board? Like, I don't, Bloodlust is out. Like, what do you do? And you run, to me, in my early, just personal experience, it really feels like Kazakus is somewhat important to Murloc Shaman at the moment.
So the card draw tools in the format, the classes all feel really, really distinct from each other, and we'll talk about that a bit later, but if you're building an aggro deck, you probably don't have a great finisher in this format. It seems like all the finishers are pretty slow, and so the aggro decks are all about traditionally what aggro decks do is they slowly build up a critical mass of individually insignificant threats, and that's what Murloc Shaman's all about, is that you have a bunch of really great 2-drops, and you have no fin can stop us if they can't clear your board, but if they do clear your board, you're just gassing, you're reloading by, well, you have to hold back some cards when you develop, and then you have to play more 2-drops and hope that gets you there. Kazakus is kind of a big punch. If you play Murloc into Murloc into Murloc into Kazakus into 5-drop, it's a really, really nice curve. And if you top deck him later game, you can get some value, especially like 9 mana, play him in the 5 mana golem right away. But there isn't really another effect like that in a lot of these aggressive decks. Secret Paladin can totally run out of gas too. And I haven't really seen as many aggro decks in general, because also they kind of get beaten up on by these watch posts.
Yeah, watch posts is a good conversation to have, because they're, at least in day one, I feel like I've seen every class, or damn near every class, with a watch post list that works. Now again, is day one, we're all playing probably horrendously inefficiently, right? But even that said, there's just something about how many damn different watch post decks I saw that just makes me go, this has to be a thing. I saw too many of it in too many different classes, and it was too effective in all of them. In every example that I came across, I did not see that coming. I know we talked about it last week, but if I remember correctly, we kind of ended on a maybe, maybe not. I think our consensus was we liked the cheapest watch post the most, and that was the closest thing you and I could agree on.
It's how do you evaluate a card type that's never been done before? How do you do that? It's hard to do.
Yeah,
it's hard to figure out, you know.
If you're getting very specific, right? But like we've had very blatant synergy builds like that before that were also neutral, like the OG C'Thun was this kind of, you know, blanket neutral, very obvious synergy that did work out for a lot of classes. But the nature of the watchtowers themselves is just so damn unique.
Yeah. And there are minions that can't attack. And also the early indication from the stats is that you probably don't want to run Kargal the Legendary that summons a 5/5 for each watch post. You probably don't even want to play that. You just want to play the 2 and the 3. Right? Like, you just want to play Far Watch Post and Morshan Watch Post. The Far Watch Post, the 2 mana 2/4, can't attack, and whenever your opponent draws a card, it permanently costs one more. And Morshan, which is the 3 mana 3/5, can't attack whenever your opponent casts a minion, summon a 2/2. Those two minions together are enough to really stymie any early game developments in almost any class, from any deck, if you get them down early. The mulligan win rate, I'm looking at Diamond Through Legend right now in Watch Post Rogue, which is the most played deck in that rank in that bracket. And the mulligan win rate of Far Watch Post is 65% or so. If you get this early, if you get this on turn 1 or 2, it's devastating. Really, really powerful. And if you develop a Morshan Watch Post against any kind of aggro deck, how do they beat it? Because anything they play to try and challenge it gives you a bunch of 2/2s.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know on the... So the first one, the Far Watch Post, I'm really scratching my head about it. I think maybe the Morshan Watch Post, being as difficult to interface with it as it is, might be to blame for seeing high day one mage win rates.
Spell Mage, yeah, because Spell Mage is good and doesn't care about this card.
Exactly.
You get to ignore it.
Yeah.
Getting to ignore the post is really good. We haven't had powerful, cheap, defensive neutrals in a while. We've had powerful, cheap, proactive neutrals, and we've had Broomstick, but we haven't had cards that are like your Tar Creeper equivalents the watch post earlier is so devastating for aggressive strategies, and the two drop is just good against everything, that they're format defying because everybody gets access to them and they do their job no matter what you're playing. And that leads me to believe, given the nature of the play experience as well, I wouldn't be surprised to see a small nudger. I am not the kind of person to call for nerfs right away. I'm not Chicken Little. The format is fun. I enjoy playing. But these are in a lot of decks, and they're really good at what they do, no matter what that deck is doing. And they make it less fun to play your cards when you're against them. And I think that's the main reason why I could anticipate a small nudge to these.
I think that's a fair place. I know you pride yourself on not being sensational. I think this is a fine enough place to go. If I had to point to, I mean, you also pointed to Penflinger, which is hilarious because the Watch Post Rogues I've seen are also running Penflinger.
Oh, yes, they are.
Yeah, which I've only seen this deck thrown around. I was mercifully lucky enough to not actually run into one myself last night, but I don't want to. But I know it's just a matter of time. I'm going to run into this deck. I think that's fair enough. I think that's a safe enough projection that we may see something done here with Watch Post. I think we could even build upon that too with a relatively safe statement of, if this continues to be successful in so many classes, that really ticks just a lot of the boxes for adjustments that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, and we're talking small nudges here. I want them to stay around. They're really interesting as far as defensive tools go and as far as interactive cards. It's just a question of how much does it punish you for playing your own cards versus how easy are they to deal with. I just think that balances a little bit off, but I want these to stay in the game, and I think they're really cool. And I have played against a priest that kept resummoning the 2-mana watch post, and I won the game against 3 of them in play. Like, I killed them when they had 3 of those in play, and all of my cards were getting taxed for 3-mana permanently. They're not unbeatable. People do concede a little bit early against them, but they're just a little bit too hard to remove efficiently without some kind of permanent negative impact versus how good they are when they stay in play. So I expect just, I don't want them to go away, but maybe just a little bit less efficient, just a little bit, just so classes have other choices as to what to do early on in the game.
Makes sense. Well, do we want to now kind of go through each class and kind of talk about what we've seen and what we think is working? Or at least what people are playing, whether it's working or not.
Let's take a look.
Yeah, which means we need to start with Demon Hunter, which low numbers played on a stat aggregate site like HS Replay. I see your note, though, and it was the first damn thing I ran into last night, and it cleaned my clock. Death Rattled Demon Hunter.
Was it
last week when you were like, I don't think there's enough cards here for this to work? I think that was last week.
And it's week one. I don't know if there are enough cards here for it to work. I did miss a very important piece. The neutral 4-mana 5/7 Death Rattle deal 5 damage to your hero. That's a thick 4 drop. And you get to drop that out of your hand for free off of the Razorfen Beastmaster, or you get to summon it with Blackthorn out of your deck. And it's a large minion. So that's pretty relevant. I don't know if Death Rattle Demon Hunter is going to be a deck in a week. And please don't make cards for this. But my initial experiences with it are that it's not a thing, right? I don't know if it's a thing, but it's not straight up not a thing. It's not embarrassing to try and put together and you play one game with it and delete the deck. There's something there, but I don't know if it's enough.
Yeah. The one I played against was just perfect. They dropped a Razor Boar on 2 and then it just felt like they never needed to play a card again.
It's nesting dolls, right? Like, you kill a thing and it pops out another thing, and you kill a thing and it pops out another thing, and then they actually do. It's a mid-range deck with card draw, right? You don't even have to play Vengeful Spirit. Your death rattles get you more death rattles, and there are ways to draw, like with Tuspiercer, you draw one card at a time. With Chaos Strike, you can cycle, and it feels very Demon Hunter-y, even though death rattles are weird. Even though death rattles have historically nothing to do with this class, when you play this deck, because I played this deck, it feels like you're playing Demon Hunter. You're doing a lot of attacking with your face, you're doing a lot of incremental card draw, and you're building a lot of annoying stuff to hit your opponent on the face. So it's the identity feels pretty well defined here, even though it's a new thing.
Yeah, I still just my eyebrow is just permanently raised at like, why are they dropping boars that summon quill boars that are beastmasters? Like this feels like the cards that make this archetype go just feel so huntery. And I don't, that part of it is weird. I'm like weirdly hung up on a lack of Demon Hunter class identity. And I don't know why, but it is just ruffling my feathers permanently.
Have you played with this yet?
Personally, no, but as I mentioned,
should try it. It feels like Illidan. It feels very much like Demon Hunter-y. I know it looks really weird and I thought the same thing, but I had to load up a game with it. And I've played a lot of Demon Hunter. I have a golden Demon Hunter. I am working on my 1K wins.
Nesting Dolls, though, feels Demon Hunter-y. I know you're talking about you're attacking with your face. That's all well and good. But like the part of this that makes it exciting, that makes it a new archetype, are these nesting death rattles. How is that Death Hunter-y or Demon Hunter-y? Because I don't see it.
They got to add things to the class at some point. Like it's Murlocs were not always a paladin thing, but Murlocs feel pretty paladin-y, right?
Oh, I know. That's fair. It's just that like Demon Hunter's first year was they just got everything.
So let's not do that again. We're good. I'm all set on not doing that again. But when you play the deck, you attack with your face a lot and you draw a lot of cards, like a good number of cards. And attacking is a really big part of the identity of the class. So it's you're still drawing cards, attacking with your face, and then the composition of your minions is a little different. But think about it. Last year, what do tokens have to do with Demon Hunter? Because we were doing token things. They were trying to make token Demon Hunter happen all year. It was like fetch. It was not going to happen. At least this deck, you can play it and go on the ladder and win a couple games as opposed to token, which feels like it was missing half a deck and they just tried to force it.
I think that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I'm fully aware of the fact that I can't put my finger on why I feel this way, but it's just a weird thing where I'm just like, I feel like they still don't quite have an identity and it irks me.
They did such a good job last year of making Demon Hunter so clear. And especially if you played WoW, last year's Demon Hunter felt like Havoc Demon Hunter. It was exactly what you were used to from World of Warcraft. This doesn't have a direct analogy to WoW, and it's also super different from last year, which is carved in our minds in a really distinct moment in time. Mm-hmm. This doesn't have, it doesn't feel quite as immediately resonant. And so everyone's going to be like, I've done Demon Hunter launches before. I've done Demon Hunter first sets. That felt cohesive, and this feels like something new and different. We're going to have to get used to it. But yeah. I'm glad that they didn't just say the class identity is good at everything.
It's a good point. It's a good point. I did crack Deathspeaker Blackthorn, so I'll add this to the to-do list. And mostly I was just surprised that this was making any waves, because I kind of agreed with you last week. Like the Death Rattle cards they got are exciting, but I didn't think there was enough. But boy, seeing it go off, it's hard not to be a believer. After being on the receiving end of this deck list.
Let's point out the win rate is not super there.
The games played are also super low.
Yeah. People are trying it, and we can settle on not an embarrassment, which is better than the set review looked. I don't expect this to be a major part of the meta unless they give it more tools, but I expect to be something that if you want to play Demon Hunter and you have these cards and you want to win a game here or there, you could do that. I wouldn't recommend it as a meta deck. The best Demon Hunter meta decks, honestly, from what I can tell, are just Soul and Lifesteal, which are similar to last set, but they got a couple new tools. I played against, in the rank bracket I'm in, I played against mostly Lifesteal Demon Hunters yesterday, and quite a few of them, which only two new cards, just the Sigil of Flame and Illidari, or not Illidari, Sigil of Flame, and there's one other new card. I forget what it is. The 2-mana 1/3 neutral that boosts the spell damage of your next spell by 2. Those were the only new cards, but the deck still felt strong.
Hmm. Well, that's good. And then there's Druid, which I've probably seen more than the other class across the table, the virtual table from me, and they've all been big Druid. Both celestial, non-celestial variants, which this one feels, I think this one feels the most samey to me, to something, you know, that an archetype that existed before the standard year switch, because they're still just wanting to ramp up their mana so they can play Guardian Animals.
Or something big and scary. They want to cast Overgrowth, and Druids that want to cast Overgrowth has been a thing since they printed Overgrowth. So it feels like the same as that. Yeah, it's Celestial Alignment as a card I'm not super sold on, but I am sold on the second Celestial Alignment in any game. The first one, you might die, but because of the Watch Post, you can kind of go greedier because there's not as much aggro. But when you play the first one and survive, then you go nourish for mana crystals, play some gross, huge stuff, and then play the second alignment and lock your opponent out again. And that's the power one.
That's a really solid analysis of how to use the alignment. I can understand just the popularity of this, right? Like, we haven't touched on this much on this episode, but it's very frequent when there's a new expansion that a certain group of the player base want to stick to what's tried and true and farm wins from those of us who are playing decks in the ridiculous hat style of, I have no idea what I'm doing, I just want to see new things, right? And I think now more than ever with this standard swap over, just because of what a massive change it is and how many cards we lost, including from the Classic Basic set with the introduction of Core, it's hard to find a deck that's tried and true. And this is probably the closest one I've seen to an archetype that existed before Year of the Griffin.
We had the same structure, right? It has the same bones. And so even though the specific choice is going to be different, also the Watch Posts fit right in. They fit in just fine. So you can play the Watch Posts and you can play the Druid and you can be like, oh, I'm doing something new. Guardian Animals kill you.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. I love decks like that, by the way. Like, 'cause at a certain point I'm done trying new things and I would like to get some wins and rank up my rewards track. That'd be nice. So I love stuff like that are a mix of old and new.
And you can still play Token Gibberling Druid if you want. That deck's still good. Still really strong. And I tried out some Taunt Druid. That feels more of a work in progress, but there's something there. I played the Razor Mane Battle Guard, the 2-mana 2/3 that makes the next taunt you play cost 2 less. And then on turn 3, I played Greybow. And then on turn 4, I played Germination on my Greybow. And then I won that game. Because I did that thing. Because I did those 3 things. So, I don't know. There's a lot to explore here. And we're going to hear that litany in a lot of classes. The exploration has just started. There's so much depth here.
Well, and I think we can just ride that exploration wave into Hunter, where if I had to tell you what I think is going on with Hunter, which I do because I'm on a podcast about Hearthstone, so I'm going to do it now. I have no idea what's going on with Hunter.
Same. The best deck I played with it yesterday that was given to me by my friend Hockey Boys was a weird Watch Post OTK Hunter, where you use the Watch Post to stabilize the early game, and then you discover copies of King Crush, and then you buff it in your hand with Warsong Wrangler, the new 4-mana 3/4, where you discover a beast and then give all copies of it +2/+1, wherever they are, and then you Leerox. So I don't know if that's good, but True Aim Crescent from last year, from Skullomance, the 1-mana 1/4 weapon for Demon Hunter and Hunter that whenever you attack a minion, your minions then attack it, can make your Watch Post attack. And that feels really strong. That feels really, really good.
And we already spent a good amount of time talking about our belief in the Watch Post. So
Post Hunter, I don't know. It is, I think, the class that I have collected it's the class I've collected the least deck lists for. I think that if you're not a Hunter main, then you're not playing Hunter right now. And a lot of the lists that I've seen are just really questionable. It feels like the class is definitely missing a little something. And it was dependent on a really strong classic set for 7 years. And I don't think that the class is bad, but it seems to be harder to make it work and it's going to need more experimentation.
Yeah, the only one I saw in practice was a Secret Hunter. And then when I was munching on my breakfast this morning watching Firebat, he was also playing Secret Hunter. That's the only real Hunter I've kind of seen in action. Trampling Rhino, still a good card. I've seen that in this kind of version of Secret Hunter that's going around. But Post Hunter's more exciting, right? Like we're not here to talk about Tundra
it's
Rhino
more novel.
Or Trampling Rhino.
It's more novel. I expect there will be a good enough Hunter deck, but it didn't get anything that's immediately synergistic, and none of the early experiments seem to be the way to go if you want to win games, especially not in a flashy way right now. So I don't think that it has a poor pool of cards, but relative to the other classes, it seems a lot worse. And looking at the front page of HS Replay, oh boy, maybe it is a lot worse. It's the global win rate of the class in standard, according to the front page of HSR, is 43%.
Yeah. I would take that. I mean, we've already said take it with a grain of salt, right? But like you, I think you've already tapped into a big piece of that, which is Hunter was so depend. Like the Hunter had a core from Basic and Classic for the entire existence of Hearthstone that is now gone. So if you're playing Hunter right now, you're probably a little lost with what to do. So Hunter, I think more than any other class, Hunter and Priest, I think more than any other classes are in a major exploratory phase right now.
Yeah, and Demon Hunter should be an exploratory phase, but the best decks are 26 cards from the last year, so they don't have to explore as much to get something that's at least over the win rate line, over the tier 2 wish line.
Surprise, Demon Hunter's good.
Well, it's okay. It's fine. It's... If I'm talking about good classes, I wouldn't put in that list. It's not terrible.
Yeah. My takeaway on Hunter is that I think this is probably the class experiencing the most experimentation right now with the like completely shot in the dark deck lists. And so I think I wouldn't take too much stock in a day 2 win rate for the class. I would, however, take stock in Mage. We've mentioned Hero Tower Mage. Let's actually take a look at, one of the popular deck lists going around right now. Just any version of the Hero Power Mage, I've seen it with and without posts, without towers. It just hurts. It is just a lot of damage coming in, at your face, at your board, wherever it needs to go. Damage finds a way in Mage at the moment. I think... right now, this is my most feared class. It's this or Rogue. Rogue or Mage are the two classes I don't really want to see across from me.
I think that's reasonable, but if you weren't a Paladin player, you would fear Paladin.
That's fair. I did run into a few Paladins today, but it was when I was trying the new Control Warlock, which we'll talk about later, so I wasn't as scared.
Yes, I'm sure you did just fine in the eternal battle of light versus darkness.
We are going to talk about an old card in the Yogg Secret, which can absolutely be a massive monkey wrench to Control Warlocks trying to win that matchup. But anyway, back to the Hero Power Mage. You know, we've talked a good amount about this hopeful archetype in during the reveal season for Barons. We've talked more Dresh to death. And if you don't remember, that's the 10 mana, 10/10 legendary for Mage that if you've dealt 10 damage with your hero power, deal 10 damage to all enemies. We were pretty sure this was going to work, and it looks like it's working here in the first 48 hours.
Yeah, and I don't think Mordresh is the reason the deck works, but it's a good card. Reckless Apprentice, good card. Buffing your hero power does seem to be relevant, and a lot of it is, again, these are... Wildfire on 2 is good in this meta because there isn't as much aggression, because aggression can't beat posts. So
yeah,
you're generally finding that decks that try and have some slower setup turns are able to get away with that waiting, and Mage benefits from that more than anyone else.
Getting a little more overarching meta, like historical meta... do you feel the opening of really any expansion is when slower decks kind of have the most chance to work across the most classes? Because I do kind of feel that's true. At least day one is when I find the most just what I would call like cute deck lists. Like they have the most chance. I guess my follow-up to that is, do you think it's not just a case of this is day two when we're having this conversation?
These lists will get more refined. We'll figure out which strategies work. But yeah, the generally outside of Ashes of Outland, which had a pretty major green outlier, usually when you rotate sets and you go into the first day and first week of a rotation meta, when you look at like how Witchwood went down, then you're going to end up with Witchwood Rise of Shadows. And just not Ashes. You find people experimenting with stuff that they couldn't get away with before. They usually play decks with, they try and make the new expansion cards work. They try and make old expansion cards that were too slow work. And then usually after about a week or two, people realize I should just lower the curve of every deck that I'm playing by a lot, and things get a lot more ruthlessly efficient. And then you are less able to maybe set up a deck like this one that we have on screen with Overlord Runthak. I do not think that Overlord Runthak will be indexed in a week. That is a 5-mana, 3/6 rush whenever this attacks, give +1/+1 to all minions in your hand. It's a core card. Seems like a card that people are trying out because he's new.
Makes it makes sense in a deck that's powering its targeted damage hero power. Like, this is a deck that has a lot of control and a lot of control options, so has the breathing room to be slower with a card like Runthak.
But we don't play a lot of minions, right? You look at how many minions are in this deck. Every minion is cheaper except for one Kuldara Drake, Kargal, and Mordresh, and none of those need the +1/+1. Those three minions do not need the help.
No, but it does help your cheap minions if you're finding them late.
Yeah, it's a card that I think is indicative that we're trying some stuff, just like, as you mentioned, exactly the phenomenon you're saying. We're trying some stuff. The Fun Police will be out in the near future. they may be paladins. Don't know. They may be rogues. But I do think the core of using Wildfire and Reckless Apprentice and including Mordresh will stick around. It seems strong enough. And also, if you're a mage deck or a rogue deck and you have Jandis Bearoff in your deck, you can get away with a lot. Just play Jandis on 5. It does not matter, because boy, is Jandis really good right now.
Also, you know how we both tend to err on the side of don't craft things, just be patient.
You can make a Jandis.
You can make a Talon.
You can't, because it's a core card.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
So no, you cannot craft a Talon for
every guy. You're right. He is a core card. Isn't Runthak as well?
He is.
Yeah, Runthak is as well. You're right. You're right. You're right. Talon Forgering is.
That's a good card.
Probably card I've seen the most of in the last 48 hours. Less than 48 hours.
It is. Yeah, it's quite a good defensive neutral that also is card draw in a format that doesn't have a ton of it.
It is. That is for sure. Yeah. It depends class to class, I think, on the card draw. I think there's still some lists that are advertising themselves as Miracle Rogue, and I think they earned the title because of what you just mentioned. Like, card draw is a little lower now, kind of across the board.
Yeah, except in Rogue and Spell Mage. Mm-hmm. Those two classes are doing just fine.
Yep. And that's the other mage. There's a no minion mage that I've seen a bit going around. Seems to have stuck around. A lot of old cards here, though. Again, kind of going back to that conversation we've been dipping in and out of, which is some people like to return to tried and true archetypes.
Though this build, this deck didn't really work last year, but because of the watch posts, and because this deck is not vulnerable to watch posts, you run two Devolving Missiles specifically to hit the 2-drop. You don't play any minions, so you don't care about the 3-drop. And we can remember, as I said, we have more time for setup. The ultimate setup card is Deck of Lunacy, where you can just slam that on 2 now and then play whatever comes out, and it's quite good. There's also a very important new card in Refreshing Springwater, which is a Loco Bananas card. 4 mana, draw 2 cards, refresh 2 mana crystals for each spell drawn. So if you draw 2 spells, then you gain 4 crystals back. And it costs 4, and you gain 4, so it costs nothing. Except if you Encanter Slow it, then it costs less than 4, and then you still get 4 crystals back, which means it gains you mana.
Listen, Hat, all I know about Refreshing Springwater is that every time I've seen it played against me since Baron's launch, it has been free. Now, I've only played against 2 mages, so that's a very small sample size, but we don't worry about that. This is a 100% free card to cast all the time, clearly, from my extensive testing.
It's, if you're playing this card, that is the goal, because if it's not going to be free, you don't put it in your deck. So you're only going to see it when it's free.
Also,
it's only going to be in
minions. Playing
mage.
This in no minion mage, there's no minions. So, yeah, although there is this, the list I have up, and I have seen other lists that are running C'Thun the Shattered. So that would, was it Body of C'Thun?
Well, they're still spells.
Oh, that's right. They are still spells. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So C'Thun himself, if you assemble him, you will not get your mana crystals back. But that is the only condition.
Oh, no. You drew your C'Thun. What a shame. What a shame.
I guess it's not free anymore. I mean, you can't play him the same turn, but also...
And you also drew him for two mana, not four, because the other card was definitely a spell.
And if you had hit both Enchanter's Flow, which you probably have because you're drawing your C'Thun after drawing your whole deck, then your Refreshing Springwater only costs two anyways, which means you get that two mana crystals back, which means get him.
Sick. Yeah, Mage seems to be in a decent place with the little of it I've seen. And also just like, you know, finger on the pulse, seeing what people are talking about. A lot of people seem pretty excited about Hero Power Mage decks. And I don't think I've talked to anyone that's had a bad experience with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's novel right now. People are going to not be happy about losing to Reckless Apprentice, and the animation takes a little bit too long. So that's something that we will hear, and I'm sure they will speed it up, because it has to individually hero power each minion. So it takes a little bit. Just ping, and then ping, and then ping, and then ping, and then ping. But it moved pretty far away from what Mage was doing last year, which is... generate a bunch of crap, and people I think were kind of done with generate a bunch of crap Mage, and this is much more deterministic. There are a couple discover cards, but the format as a whole has such a dramatic reduction in the volume of discover cards that they each individually feel more powerful, because you only get to do it a couple times a game. So being able to discover feels like I finally get a look in the box, I get to make another card. If my opponent doesn't get to do this and I get to do this twice a game, that's a major benefit for me. It's a really nice adjustment. It's very refreshing, like spring water.
So moving in the Paladin, we already talked about Secret Pally. I don't want to retread it, but have you seen any other archetypes that are making waves?
There's Paladin with Secrets, Paladin with Librams, and Paladins with Secrets and Librams.
Yeah, I've gone up against one Librum Paladin, haven't played one myself, because it's like, I already did that, I want to play the new thing. But
yeah, it's the Paladin. The class has a lot of really good cards. We've seen this in a couple of metas before, of this density of choice they have. I'm going to go back a ways here. It reminds me of like Mage and Angoro, or Shaman even before that in the League of Explorers era, where you had about the same, like you had about 40 different cards to choose from, and you picked whichever 20 you wanted to play and then filled in the rest, and it did not matter. As you could be playing Shaman with Tunnel Trog, Totem Golem, and then you can top it at Alakir, or you can top it at Doomhammer, it didn't matter. You could be playing Mage with Arcanologist and Primordial Glyph, and you could top out at Medivh into Alexstrasza, or you could top out at Alaneth, and that was good enough. And again, I know this is, I'm showing my age a bit here, but Paladin has so many good cards that whatever combination of them you want to use, you're going to make something good.
They kind of feel like the new Hunter in that way.
Yeah. And they've been... The interesting thing about Paladins, they've pushed them in expansions for the past year or so. And then also that was to make up for a lack of a good core set. And then they gave them a good core set. So they just... Every Paladin card seems good. It's an embarrassment of riches right now. It's just a lot going on.
Yeah. I'm excited. We'll be playing a lot of Paladin. I guess I'm a holy Hearthstone player, because I'm also quite excited about Spell Priest, coming together in Priest. I only played two games of this last night. I enjoyed my time with it, but I did end, not winning, and also just feeling like I'm not even close to understanding the correct way to play this deck.
Priest is hard. Like it's... There are a lot of good Priest decks, but Priest is definitely challenging. And overall, I think the win rates align with your experience. They are lower than how the deck felt to me, just because everyone's got to learn how to play this style of deck and got to maximize the card choices. And it does seem like if you're playing Priest right now, rally for Veil Weaver and Blood Weaver. Like, Weaver rally is really, really good. The Sethic pool is much smaller, the pool of pre-spells. You are pretty likely to generate rallies, and that means you can bring back your Sethic Bloodweaver and then do it again, and just keep doing it and doing it and doing it and generating spells and discounting stuff. It's pretty strong.
it kind of gets to do the pre-Griffin mage thing a bit if you end up in that situation.
And the spell matters mechanic is cool, too. I haven't seen that be as successful yet, like with the Void Flayer, which looks at your hand for each spell that you have. It shoots a missile. I haven't seen this be as successful yet because it feels like Priest can't really hoard a bunch of spells. You need to play your early stuff to kill things, and you have a bunch of minions. The builds that I've seen that have done a little bit better are lighter on the minion counts to make sure the rallies are always the same hits, and doesn't focus quite as much on the spells. Just because, again, there's not as much card draw in the format, so you generally tread water with the amount of cards in hand, even when you're playing stuff. But there could easily be something here. This will need a lot of optimization as well. Like you said, it's like Hunter, where the specifics of which deck we're playing are going to take a while to figure out.
It's been my experience for sure. This is a deck I am excited about. I like just how much, I'm excited by the change of Priest. Everyone listening, do not let, I promise, I'm still glad Big Priest is gone, or Rez Priest is gone, even though I played it for quite a while at the end of the previous standard year. The reason I'm so stoked is just because Priest is so different. And also, as we talked about, Zyrella is just such a supremely cool legendary. Getting to kind of build my own board clear based on how much health I've restored this turn it's so nice. It's so cool. I really, really like it. And it feels priesty. And as we talked about, I think it was last week, it feels discipline priesty. Cause I'm fighting with my heels, and that just feels rad. I really like it.
And have you noticed as well, in almost every class we've looked at, most of the sweepers are legendaries. Legendary minions. Most of the sweepers in this format are happening once a game. Here we have Soul Mirror and Zyrella. When you look at Mage, like Mordrish, I guess, is kind of a sweeper. You've got Reckless Apprentice, which is kind of sort of a sweeper. But when you look at the big swing removal turns, like with Samuro as well, they're designed to happen once a game. They put them all on legendaries. I think it's pretty smart, especially when they're giving us half the legendaries. If you want to clear boards, you do it in an interesting, different way each time, and it's not something that you have to expect multiple times that game. Maybe you renew into a second Soul Mirror, but you've got one Zyrella, and that's what's happening.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to give a shout out to Thrive in the Shadows, because I don't know, I didn't think this was really going to trigger the pleasure center of card games in my head, but it really does. Just being...
Oh, it's great.
Oh, God, dude. Targeted draw. Choose your own targeted draw, right? All right, I want a spell from my deck. Also, I get to choose which spell it is from a randomly generated option of three options. That is just, boy, that really strikes me in the, haven't played it in a while, Magic fan. Does.
It's getting to do what you built your deck to do is fun. So they made cards that let you do that. And to use the Magic analogy, this is something they did years and years ago with the release of Invasion. Now I'm really showing my age, because this was in the year 2000, 21 years ago. They printed a cycle of lands that were low rarity, came into play tap for two colors, because they wanted people to play their spells. And that's what's going on in Hearthstone right now. They want you to play your cards, and they want them to work. So the draw that you're seeing, your Scavenger's Ingenuities and your Insights and your Thrive in the Shadows, your Knight of Anointments, go get the cards you put in your deck on purpose and then play them. And they're not recruit level busted where you're cheating mana by doing it. You just get to put the card you want in your hand when you need it, and then you get to play it. And then that's good, because games are more fun when you get to do what you want.
Yep. I dig it. Cause there was a time where Casino Mage was a novelty, generating that many random spells. It was just this is not going to win consistently, but it's fun. Let's go play it. But then that just kind of was Mage. And then that kind of just was Hearthstone for a long time. And as someone who really doesn't that's just not my jam. I'm not here to say whether it's good or bad. It's about intention. And I think that's the direction that the team was trying to go. And I think they were very successful in sending the game in that direction. It's not my cup of tea. the direction it looks like we are now heading, the trajectory we are now on, the train we have stepped onto, I'm very much here for it.
I'm glad we tried the year of playing a Trolden video. I'm glad we tried it. I'm glad we got to experience it, right? Of just crazy, goofy crap happening every single game, and you generate this thing, and it made this thing, and it made this thing, and it made this thing. Like, it was cool and fun for a while, and then novelty wore off. And then I don't even know what to play around this game. They made whatever card they wanted. There's nothing I could do about it. And I lost. The last week during the Frankensteiner, where they reverted all the cards before rotating, I had a quest for 10 arcane spells, which I cleared in one game with Cyclone Mage. And I played a Cyclone for 5 spells, and I got 2 puzzle boxes. And I played them both that game. And, like, I had no idea what was going to happen. My opponent had no idea what was going to happen. I ended up killing myself because I drew 9 cards off the second puzzle box and fatigued to death. Like, okay. But now I don't have to do that. Now we can just play Hearthstone. And I'm enjoying Generation here and there, but I like... this feels different and novel and fun and enjoyable, and I think a direction for the game.
Yeah, I agree. It's very much... how I liked card games when I first got into them, which was really late to the Magic game. I think I got into Magic 2 or 3 years before Hearthstone. So, yeah. Played a little Pokemon when I was a kid. That was it, though. Like, barely any. I was mostly a collector. So. Rogue. It's time.
Rogue.
It's time to just go, what's going on with Rogue, Kat? Actually, they did play a Rogue game last night, but I mostly wanted to see, I was just like, I think Aggro Rogue probably still works, and I kind of just want to pick up a win. It's what I played after I lost 2 games with Priest. Did indeed win. The stealth heavy Aggro Rogue appears to still be alive and well.
Oh yeah. The deck from last expansion, except you take out Eviscerate and put in slightly different Eviscerate with Wicked Stab.
Don't you mean Evisa Wait?
That was I enjoyed. I'm gonna golf clap.
It's like I've been hanging out with you for a few weeks.
Yeah. Joss, I'd apologize if I was sorry, but I'm not. So Rogue, the format does have a few cards that are really, really powerful when they're played on curve. And Rogue has most of them. So there are the Watchposts, which are neutrals. There's Efficient Octobot. The 2-mana 1/4 frenzy reduce the cost of all cards in your hand by 1 permanently. Cards insane if you play it early. Really, really strong. This is the best Kazakus deck and the best Jandis Bayrov deck because of Shadow Step. And sometimes you play Octobot on 2 and then you get to Jandis Bayrov on 4. And the Jandis pool right now is so good. You always hit something good off Jandis because there are very few bad 5 drops and some really, really juicy ones. Really powerful ones.
Yeah. Like, I'm with you on the Shadow Step. I in that one game, I had Kazakas in my deck, and I didn't even do it. I was just like, oh, I need a deck list. Aggro Rogue, cool, sounds good. Just send it. And Kazakas came in my hand. I was sitting on Shadow Step, and I was just like, oh, yeah, this seems good. This seems good. It was the opposite of my experience with Priest, where I was just like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I have absolutely no clue. I think this might be good. And then I went and played that Rogue deck and I was just like, oh yeah, clearly I can see where the value is.
And sometimes you Kazakus for a 5-mana golem and you get give your team +2/+2 when you have a Shadow Step and you don't Shadow Step the Kazakus, because then you go like basically Kronk, Shadow Step Kronk. So you give your whole team +4/+4 and then your opponent dies. And in addition to that, it's the best Penflinger class. In addition to that, Field Contact, which we talked about, not even with the Flinger interaction. I've read this card a bunch of times. We talked about my fear of this card on the show last week.
And since it's a new one, reminding the listeners at home, 3-mana 3/2 in Rogue. After you play a Battlecry or combo card, draw a card.
So I'm glad you read it because I thought I'd read it last week, but I hadn't parsed it. When you see Battlecry, you think of minions. There are combo spells. So yesterday I went Field Contact, Swindle, draw an extra card. Prize Plunderer, draw a card. Wand Thief, draw a card. Brain Freeze, draw a card. And I said, why card work way this? Why do this?
It's like you had a Brain Freeze, the way you're delivering those lines.
No. Yeah. And it was a free sprint. It just hand overflowing with cards. So I don't know, I'm not going to call it broken. I'm going to say I was surprised at how many cards I drew, and you don't really get to do this in as many classes right now. I don't know if that's a bad thing, but card draw is powerful, and Rogue gets to do it in large chunks.
Yeah. Yeah. Field contact is concerning. It's on my radar. Cause hey, you know, Auctioneer was good, but you know, how about half the mana to put your draw on board?
Yeah. And this is without considering Penflinger. We're not considering Penflinger here when I'm talking about this card, because obviously it's good with Penflinger. Like we mentioned last week before playing with the card, spoilers, that came true. It is good to Penflinger draw card. Like that's a good thing to do. Yeah. I had posted a tweet before the expansion came out of just, it was two field contacts, two Penflingers. I don't care what the other cards are. You can play backstabs, I guess. And I was wrong because we're not playing backstab. That was the mistake I made of saying that maybe we'd play backstab because backstabs aren't good anymore because no one's playing early game minions because of the posts.
Well, and is it necessary even too, like,
nope.
When you think about what else you got, Prize Plunderer, like if you need damage now, you know, we're still doing Brain Freeze,
and all the early game minions have like four health, like Crab Riders and Octobots. Yeah. I don't want to backstab them.
Yeah, we got a double C thick suite of early game minions.
Yeah, this expansion really been wailing on the glutes.
Yeah. Is glute day a thing?
I are you assuming that I have exercised within the past decade?
Because that's what I call it when I go to Olive Garden and get unlimited breadsticks. But yeah.
Oh, I see. The more direct approach. Yes.
Yeah. We've mentioned Murloc Shaman a few times, but let's talk about it. That seems to just be the answer for Shaman at the moment. I did see an Elementalist going around.
Was shared in our chat by one Joss Plays. Do you know her?
Oh, was it? Was it? Okay. I'm sorry, Joss. I missed it. I didn't see that. I did. This is one of the first damn things I did, and I even crafted Flurgle to do it.
Oh, the Murloc. Yes. Yeah. Flurgle is good if you get it going. The Spawn Pool Forager. The 1-mana 1/2 death rattle summon a 1/1 tiny fin. Murlocs do not exist without this card. This card enables everything.
It's sticky. It's a sticky Murloc, and that's what you need. You need a Murloc to stick so that you can Murloc. You need a Murloc so you can Murloc.
And activate all your 2 drops. And it's a 1-mana 2/3 effectively. The issue is that none of the rest of what the deck does matches up all that well with the format right now. But it has a lot of pieces. It doesn't really have draw or generation. It doesn't have an underbelly angler. Like this list that we're looking at now has to play Voracious Reader at 3 mana. And that's how you know a deck is struggling for value.
Yeah. Yeah. I am a little, I really enjoyed my time with it, but I am a little concerned. It is all in as hell, which previous Murloc Shamans have been. But as you mentioned, they had generation potentially busted, like catch a windfall level of generation. With the angler, which is gone. So in goes Voracious Reader. I think this needs another expansion or a mini set.
Yeah. They definitely were going for, if you like playing Murloc Shaman, this feels like Murloc Shaman for better or worse. And it very much is on brand with what the deck feels like. But also historically the deck has struggled to be competitive and they hit that too. So we need some kind of value or more one drops or more board protection, really just something.
Yeah. Do you have any experience with the Elementalist?
I don't. I haven't seen it or I haven't played it, but it looks sweet. I really want to play with Lilypad Lurker. That card looks awesome. The 5-mana 4/5, you played an elemental last turn, you hex something.
Yeah, I was really excited about that when we were looking at it in preview last week. I mean, who doesn't want to hex on a 4/5 stick?
We all want it. The question is how easily can we activate it? And it seems like this list has it figured out. There's so many elementals.
All I've been doing as we've been going through deck lists here, because I've been pulling them up on Digital Replay, which just tapped into my collection, is being sad, realizing how many deck lists are currently running Kargal, and I did not open him.
Might be worth the craft. Maybe spend some gold.
I'm a little out of dust at the moment.
Yeah. Well, and also look, his win rates aren't fantastic. Like, it's okay. I don't think you need Kargal in the post decks because the posts are their own reward. They're just that good on curve.
Yeah, I'm also seeing a lot of exclamation points on this deck list. So real low games played.
Oh, yes.
Even by super low game count. Less than 48 hours standards, low games played. But yeah, still something I want to be good.
Yes. And you can also, if you want to, play Brucon Shaman, where you just have a lot of burn. And that's also a solid deck list because, again, you avoid playing into the 3-mana watch post because you just equip weapons and hit them.
Okay, everyone, actually, never mind. I just got excited. I'm giving this list that was sent in live during the show by Joss. This is gets my stamp of approval because all of the talk of watch post, this came up in my head last week, and it's been living in my head even more this now because we've talked about watch post so many times today. I thought to myself, why hasn't anyone, at least just to make me happy, dropped a Defender of Argus in their deck that has watch posts? And this list has one of. It has a one of Defender of Argus.
There it is. Yeah. I've been playing that card in Classic all week. And let me tell you, it's good in Classic. Maybe it's good here too. Maybe it's good here too, because all these elementals, like, they got some big butts.
I was thinking going in today's show, and I think it more so now after our conversation, that posts may just be good enough that you don't need to taunt them up.
Yeah, I don't want to taunt them because I don't want them to die. I want to taunt the other stuff.
It's a very good point. It's a very good point. Well, you're Shaman in this deck, and you've got elementals, you've got totems, you have new totems, you have old totems if you're using certain hero portraits. You know?
You have all the totems, yeah. This deck looks fun. I want to try it. I'll add it to the list. I have 14th in the queue.
Joss, I think this may be the top of my need to go play right away upon exiting this podcast recording. Thank you for sending this in. And thanks for hanging out in chat, Joss. Missed you.
Also, Kindling Elemental, fantastic golden animation if you have in golden. The Kindling is very fiery.
Oh, I bet I can. I'm looking at it right now. I bet. Oh, yeah. I think I did get it's one of so these in golden. I think I did.
I just stared at it for a while. I got a
decent number of goldens from regular packs, not golden packs, obviously. Warlock. This was the most recent archetype I've tried, which is Control Warlock. Seems to be quite popular.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah.
And you know who's back? You know who's back in a big way?
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Jax is back, back, back. Tell a friend.
Yes, that good effort. Appreciate that. Jax is, that's, we're massaging the syllables there, but yes, J-Rex, he's good. It's a good card. Strong.
Yes. Yeah. He is solid. Because, hey, let me tell you, Hat, if you're out there playing Priest right now and you're like, boy, I miss the days when I did nothing on turn two, Warlock's got your back. You can just draw a card. And just
tap.
And just draw another card on the next turn. And maybe just draw another card on the next turn. If you really are feeling it, you know, I ended up in a game against the No Minion Mage as this Control Warlock, and it was awkward, Hat. It was awkward.
I don't think that you were, that list is well aligned to deal with this one. Feels like they got you beat.
I died. I feel like you could probably get there though, just by sheer healage. It depends on how your soul fragments line up for you, I think. Cause you do have Tychatis. So if your soul fragments get you there, you might be able to force a fatigue game in that matchup.
Maybe. Yeah. It's the list that we're looking at here is probably devastating for Mage because this list also has two Ogremancers. And let me tell you, a Spell Mage does not want to play against Ogremancer.
No, they don't. And if you don't remember Ogremancer, that's the 5-mana 3/7 whenever your opponent casts a spell, summon a 2/2 skeleton with taunt. I've even seen this in the control decks that I ran up against. It wasn't I am playing this exact list at the moment. But I was also seeing this out in the wild.
Yeah, it was a great card pre-rotation as well, because Aggro Rogue had 16 spells in it that all cost maximum 2 mana. So you just played Ogremancer on an empty board, and then when they wanted to go buff their sword, they made a little 2-2 taunt in the way.
Yep.
And when to go remove that 2-2, they gave you another one.
Yep. And, you know, if you were playing this kind of back in the day, like when, what was it? Where did Ticketus come in? No, he wasn't Ashes. I'm getting confused.
He was Dark Moon.
Dark Moon. I can't quite make out the watermark on my monitor at the moment.
He cares about the tickets to the fair.
That's it. That is correct. You would also know that like Yashiraj is quite important. What if I told you that you could always draw your Yashiraj because you put Talon Forgering in your Warlock deck? So you're bringing back your Ticketus. You're bringing back your Strongman.
And you're cascading disasters.
Yes. So much corruption. So much control. So much minion death. It's delightful. Also, the award for my longest game in the last 48 hours goes to a mirror match on this list.
Yes. And the mirror matches are interesting because double Ticketus first does not win you the game. If you burn soul fragments instead of real cards, you will lose. I did that yesterday where I played Corrupted Ticketus with a Watch Post on 8, Jiraxxus on 9, Yashiraj on 10, and I lost the Warlock Mirror just because I hit soul fragments. My opponent's Ticketus hit relevant cards, and they also just played better than me.
That's where a deck tracker really, really comes in handy, because you can like hedge your bets at least, because I had that thought because I had Ticketus in my hand. I was like, he doesn't have that many cards left, but a lot of them are soul fragments, and who knows how much more soul fragment generation he has. So at one point, my opponent had 6 soul fragments. I waited till the lowest point my opponent got to was 2. And that's when I was like, okay, it's Ticketus time.
Yes. And that was a good play. That was not what I did. I hit a bunch of soul fragments and then lost.
Yeah, I did. I ended up winning. And I believe that had a large play in that. And also was able to get Cascading Disasters back in my hand from Yashiraj. I think that mirror match also is like, did you get your important things before either of you decided to start Ticketusing? Right? Like, yeah. I happen to have Jiraxxus, Yashiraj, Ticketus all in my hand before the thought had even occurred to me that, ooh, he also has Ticketus, but I already had like my end game value. It was ready. It was safe.
When I queued into another Warlock, I kept Jiraxxus as my mulligan for that reason.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Which was very strange feeling to keep a 9-drop, but it was correct.
Yeah, I would highly recommend. That's going to be such a slow damn game.
Like, yes.
Just go greedy or go home. Or go greedy and go home with an extra win because you went greedy. Yeah, I like this list. I liked it before. If you go back and listen to the post-launch episode of Dark Moon Fair, I talk about how I was eating crow because I got a golden Ticketus, and I tweeted out that I was like, I don't think I'm excited about this. But then like Control Warlock with Ticketus was a really, really good day one deck. It petered out pretty quickly after that, but day one I was destroying with Control Warlock. So this isn't already an archetype that I rather enjoy, and I'm glad to see that it's back with some fresh additions for Year of the Griffin.
Yes, including the return of an old friend. Thanks, J-Rex. Good to see you, buddy.
It's good to see you. It's good to see you, Lord Jiraxxus. So now you can be Mecha Jiraxxus when you turn into regular Jiraxxus.
You can be stricken by the curse of flesh. Very on-brand.
There you go. I wish they should do a unique voice line for when he turns into regular Jiraxxus, but you had the Mecha Jiraxxus as your hero portrait.
They should do that, and then I'll never know it because I'm never switching off of Nemzy ever.
You're one of those.
I sure am. This is going to be awesome.
And you play Rogue, which means you play Petflinger. You're the worst.
It's at least I use Diochan Valeera, but I'm waiting for a Togwaggle Hero Portrait. Blizzard, I know you listen to the show. Make a Togwaggle Hero Portrait. Oh. Do it. Put it in the game.
Well, okay. Togwaggle is among my least favorite voices. Definitely from the League of Evil. Definitely.
I bet you would take Candle. You're one of those.
Yes, I would. What class? Let's run with this for just a second, because we've been on brand. We've been on topic. We've been trying to have a very serious conversation about what the 48-hour meta looks like. What class would Togwaggle be?
Rogue. Ice Baron Togwaggle's a Rogue Legendary.
Oh, that's...
We know that, right?
Okay, okay.
Yes. I spent a lot of time thinking about Togwaggle's flavor implications as a hero.
My brain goes immediately to Battlegrounds for Togwaggle. Where...
What? Oh, because he's Wax Rider? Because of the dragon thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I think of. That's what I think of when I think of Togwaggle. But... Anyways, Warrior is the last class we have not discussed, and they seem to have also found a footing in Rush. I've seen Rush Warrior lists being thrown around everywhere. I saw chatter in our Discord that people are finding success with Rush Warrior, and I am finding that I am missing a lot of very expensive cards. So this is,
yes,
this is an archetype I will not be trying anytime soon.
You will probably have a Samuro in the near future.
Oh, I do have a Samuro. I don't know why that's shown as... I bought the damn rewards track, so some of this is... Well,
it probably doesn't track diamonds yet. I'm guessing Aegis Replay doesn't know how to track diamond cards.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yep. But yes, you're missing Rokara, Kargath, Krasnov, and two playmakers. That's a lot of dust to sink into this deck. Yep. And Warrior is definitely also a work in progress. It's one of the lower win rate classes right now because people are figuring out Rokara is a strong card. That's the 3-mana 2/3 with Rush. Whenever a minion you control attacks and survives, you give it a permanent +1/+1. If a minion attacks face, it's going to survive. So it gets the +1/+1. So you play this, and then you go face with, like, say, a Crab Rider, and you do that twice, and then that's a big Crab Rider, for example.
Gnarly, to say the least.
Yeah. Yep, but the deck also, it's weirdly mid-rangey. It has a lot of weapons, almost too many, that you usually have too many weapon charges. You hit a glut of them in the mid-game. And you don't really have a high-end way to close games outside of hoping to build a wide board and then kill them with ETC, which happens sometimes, but not all the time.
Kind of feels like this could maybe run... Nah, there's too many 4-drops for Kazakus. It needs a board buff.
4-drops, unfortunately.
It needs a board buff, yeah, which... Yeah.
I don't know what it needs. It feels like it needs a late game, but Overlord Sourfang definitely isn't it, because some of the best frenzy cards are not ones that are impactful when you bring them back. Like Blademaster Samuro, you deal 1 damage to their entire board, whatever. You have to work pretty hard to include Sourfang, and then he doesn't have the payoff that you're really looking for. So it doesn't have a great cohesive late game finisher that's actually relevant. So it's good in the mid game.
Rush is by design not a finisher, right?
Yeah.
Like Crab Rider has been a finisher in the past because in Murloc decks, just by virtue of surviving earlier in the game than it should because of its 4 health. But that's not going to be early in the game when Sourfang comes down.
This deck doesn't do anything broken. It does good stuff. It plays fair, and it's good at playing fair, but it doesn't do anything unfair, and a lot of the best decks in the format right now definitely feel like they're getting away with stuff. I don't really get that vibe with this deck, unless you have Rokara on curve after Crab Rider, and even then, still just a couple of minions that you can usually deal with.
So would you chalk this deck's success up to the fact that we're probably playing a little slower than we're going to be in a month?
I mean... I think that players right now can find success with anything as long as they play it a bunch and get an idea of how the deck works. From a win rate perspective, this deck is in the tier 3-ish range, under 50% win rate. It's got some synergistic stuff. It's got some good draws. But I don't think that I would say that it's a runaway success like some of the other decks that we've seen so far. It's not bad. But I would imagine that it's good in some rank brackets where you're playing against a lot more people that are trying your Murloc Shamans that are maybe going to fall off, and trying against some Paladin draws that maybe aren't as, you know, they don't hit the sword or whatever. It's good at dealing with minion combat with other decks that are trying to go small, but it doesn't seem like it lines up all that well against posts. Doesn't line up all that well against control. And I would still rather be the Paladin against this most of the time, which is, it's just not the best place for the deck to be at the moment. I think there's something here, but I don't, as of right now, it's not really a huge meta contender, even though I think it's a perfectly defensible choice if you enjoy playing it.
It's a good rundown. It's a good rundown. So what do we think the most dangerous decks are? As I said, I think I'm the most afraid of seeing Mage and Rogue at the moment. What are you hoping to avoid?
Well, but you've been playing Paladin. Do you feel like the villain when you play that deck? Do you feel like that you're doing something better than what other people are doing?
I wouldn't consider myself playing anything right now. I don't think I have more than three games played with any one deck. Because I was trying to get a good idea of things that was going on.
Sure.
I could see myself sticking with Paladin. I really want to figure out Priest because it's just I just find it interesting. That Elemental Shaman deck list looks so fun. I'm not going to be able to avoid it. I'm definitely going to try that one. And I think I will become a villain and play Watchpost Rogue. Instead of fearing running into it, I think I'll just make people fear me playing it.
Yeah, I think that posts in general, they're neutrals. I think that's what people are primarily going to voice concern about that play experience, because they're going to be everywhere. And so,
and that's what I meant when I said it checks a lot of boxes for cards that have seen adjustments. They Team 5, a lot of things have changed in their design beliefs over the many different versions of the team we've had. The one thing they all have had in common over the whole history of Hearthstone is they do not like homogenized deck building.
Correct. Yeah. And
so if this holds true, this is my, instead of calling it and saying Watchpost will get adjusted or get nerfed, I'm going to say if it stays as popular among as many classes as it currently looks like it is, then we're going to see a nerf come in.
It aligns with cards they've nudged in the past.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. And if you look at the classes and the decks that we've gone through, something that they've been working on for a couple of years, often it's the butt of a joke. But I think it's really been nailed as class identity. And this set very much, especially with spell schools, tried to bring WoW specs into Hearthstone, where the deck that you're playing can feel different, but also each class feels dramatically different. If we were to talk about what are the common key elements of this format outside of posts, I don't think there really is one. You don't have a lot of card draw unless you do. You don't have a lot of burst damage unless you do. You don't have a lot of value unless you do. There's no infinite endgame value except for J-Rex. There's no burst card draw except for field contact. There's no giant crazy game-ending swing turns except for a celestial alignment. Every class feels really different from each other, and like there are so many different ways to play right now. So the posts, homogenized, like you said, I expect those to get a little bit of a nudge. They are also the most important cards in the format right now, because what the format is doing is either, if you're not playing the posts, you have to play something that can ignore them. We haven't found a good way to combat them yet. So you just have to ignore them, which means play Control Warlock or Spell Mage, or also be a post deck, or be Secret Paladin and draw well. So the villains are definitely the decks that can exploit the post the best, and Watchpost Rogue is the most played deck right now. Paladin is statistically the best class right now. It's got a lot going on, and Librem did not lose very much. Salad's Pride is important, but you're still really good at controlling boards, and you can be a good post deck too if you want to. There's just a lot that you can do in Paladin. Mage is cool. And is trying some stuff, and the early experiments are successful. But I expect this time next week there will have been so many changes that we'll be excited to talk about how much things are different.
I agree. And I'm having a think on what you said about the kind of the dichotomy between the homogenization of posts and the uniqueness of every other class outside of Watchposts. And that just seems like a striking takeaway for sure. Not to be like, and I'm not trying to reduce everything. We just had a 2-hour conversation. There's no real point to reduce, but that is also kind of where my focus is. But at the same time, think about the ramble I just went on, which was, well, okay, I did this, that, and the other, and this is what I want to now go do. And most of what I rambled off were things I haven't done yet.
There are way too many decks to really get an impression of so far. The format, I could not explain this format to anyone that asked as like, what's good, what wins games? I have no idea. We know a couple outlier cards when played on curve that are good. Two of them are neutrals on turn 2 and 3. And so those are going to be what people really notice, because it's one of the few patterns to latch onto right now, because everything else is wide open and feels so diverse and different from game to game.
Yeah. And a lot of us, we want to win. You want to win. So you tend to latch on to the things that have any sort of proof as to their ability to get those wins. And that's why we end up in these pocket metas, at expansion launch. So, you know, things could change drastically by next week. I expect certain things to change drastically by next week. And we'll have to see. I'm just relieved that it doesn't feel like our conversation about posts don't feel anything close to the level of, oh, this was a mistake that I felt coming into Ashes with Demon Hunter release.
Oh, not even close to being close. Yeah, it's, and even, I don't know the statistics. I don't know the win rate level, if it is on par with that expansion. The feeling of playing ladder is so diverse that it's not just a sea of green. It's not the same card. It's not the same one deck. There are so many decks to play that it's, the meta does not feel unbalanced in that way. And you'll note whenever you, when I was doing a stream last night and chat today, everyone says that something is broken, but it's a different deck each time. That usually means they've done a good job of making players feel powerful without the format being unbalanced. And so far, it reminds me a bit of Scholomance. Scholomance Druid felt good, but it wasn't the deck was powerful. It's that certain cards on curve were powerful. And that's where I think we are again, where the balance issue isn't what the deck is trying to do, which is how efficient it is at doing the thing. And right now, there are a couple things that are a little too efficient, but the general structure, we can live in this house.
Can we live in this post?
But you could. You got to go home when your watch is over. Oh, you can hear that. Hold on.
Yeah, I can. I can indeed. It's fine. It's okay. It happens. There are indeed streets by both of our domains. I'm getting waved at by Hat, who's delightfully muting while the sirens go by. But I think this episode is also going to go by. This is we have reached the end of our conversation about what decks we've seen and have played in the past 48 hours. I figured this episode would go long, so I wasn't planning to take emails, but we you know, it's a new expansion, so a lot of the things in reserve are a little kind of dusty and talking about archetypes that we're not playing anymore, which is a good time to call out for more emails. Write in tacpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what's on your mind. What are you playing? What are you finding success with? If you're a patron, you can write us a question right there in the patron Discord. You can skip the inbox entirely. Personally, if you're finding success with Priest, I want to hear from you. I want to know what you're picking up on, if you have any tips, because this is, I'm really, really interested in new Priest and feel utterly lost in how to play it efficiently. So you let me know. Other than that, we want to, speaking of our patrons, we want to thank you again for your support. Head on over to patreon.com/TAC if you'd like to support this here program. We are an independent show this here. You know, don't let the Hearthstone swag that we get fool you. Doesn't pay the bills. Our wonderful, wonderful patrons do. So thank you very much. Head on over to patreon.com/TAC and consider supporting the show. Also, huge thanks to our Patreon producers, Declan H. and Cheesy Bob. Thank you very much for your support. The whole back catalog of Angry Chicken episodes can be found over at theangrychicken.com. So if you miss an episode and you want to do some catch-up, that's a great way to do so. Or you can go to youtube.com/amove2, numerical number 2. Go there for the full length of VODs. But Ridiculous Hat, before you go, where can everyone find you?
You can find me at twitter.com/ridiculoushat. Which is the hub of all of my content. Wednesdays, twitch.tv/amovetv. You're here right now. Thursdays, twitch.coinconcede.com because we got a weird identifier. And coinconcede podcast. Saturdays, viciousyndicate.com. And every day, twitter.com/ridiculoushat.
Sick. Yeah. I'm Garrett Art on Twitter. You can follow me on there. GARRETTART. That's my Twitter handle. Go there. Give me a follow. We gave away quite a few mega bundles last week. So congrats to our winners, by the way. And if you were following either TAC Podcast or me, you would have been made aware of that fact. So go do that. Also, you should follow Ridiculous Hat because you were also giving away mega bundles.
I was. Yeah, a couple times. That last day, that mega bundle party was like, whoa, they got 10 more. Let's just ship those out. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, it was a lot of packs. It was a lot of packs. Other than that, amove.tv for this and everything that I produce. If you like Heroes of the Storm, I've got Into the Nexus. If you like World of Warcraft, I've got, what the hell is it called? WoW Killer. I almost said For Azeroth. I'm like, no, that's Jocelyn's show, which you should also go check out. And yeah, follow Jocelyn at Joss Plays. Check out the Gamers Inn. Check out For Azeroth. And wish her well. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of The Angry Chicken. Until next time, and as always, job's done.
Job's done. Watch is over.
Done.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good.
I made it through this entire episode without making a Post Malone joke, and I want to be commended for that.
Well done. I was watching out for it.